This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly talk show on Brooklyn's Radio. And it's Just Women for the next hour, talking to very interesting, very intriguing and inspiring women. I'm Alison Florence and my co-presenter today is Claire Gibson. Hello, Claire.
Hello, Alison. Hi, yes. Today we have two guests in the studio to talk about work and life, which I'm sure will be of interest to many listeners. Unfortunately, Laura Lord, who is due to be our kids' guest today, couldn't make it, but she will be appearing on a future programme. So in the kids' section today, Alison and I will be talking about a few articles which have recently appeared in the press and which hopefully you will find interesting. If you'd like to join in with any questions or comments, do email studio@brooklandsradio.co.uk. We'd love to hear from you.
To start the programme today, under the work section, I'd like to welcome Kay Durrant. Now, Kay and I both worked for a locally based company, Procter & Gamble, although we've now both moved on to do other things. And Kay is involved in so many different things that I'm sure we could probably do a full programme just talking to her. So, welcome, Kay.
Hello.
Now, I know it's some time since you actually left Procter & Gamble, isn't it? Did you have ambitions when you were there to do things which you hadn't been able to do earlier in your career?
Kind of. I've always been creative, and I actually trained while I was still at P&G to be a hypnotherapist with a view to that being some sort of money-making concern when I left.
And what did you actually have to do to train? Was that just in your own time or evening classes?
It was in my own time, but it was usually 2 days at the every weekend in a local college.
And you say that you were a hypnotherapist and a psychotherapist. What's the difference between those two?
Well, hypnotherapy involves actually putting people into a state of hypnosis, and psychotherapy is just basically talking to people and getting them to say things without suggesting what they say. You know, people have to tell you what their problems are and any resolutions that they think they might have, and so you help them solve their own problems.
Right. So you don't actually give them advice, you sort of almost leave them to sort of tell you what they think.
That's right.
To help them.
That's right. The same sort of thing as they do in the Samaritans. You never tell anybody what they should do. There's all sorts of ramifications with that, legal and just being sensible, really. If people can solve their own problems, they get to a resolution much quicker.
Yeah, I can understand that. It's self-discovery. It leads to more acceptance and tolerance of what the issues are and planning a way
That's
forward,
right.
I imagine.
That's right.
Well, it sounds very hard to do, to help people work out what these things are. How do you do that?
Well, often you would offer them perhaps hypnotherapy to start with, because you put them into a state of total relaxation, and while you're talking to them, things come out, and then you say, well, under those circumstances, what would you prefer to do? And you know, you just sort of lead people into making suggestions themselves without actually making a suggestion.
Actually, when we talk of hypnotist, often the main thing that pops into our mind is someone, say, like Paul McKenna or whatever.
Give up chocolate.
Yes, exactly. Do you find that people like that have given hypnotists like yourself, who offer a different type of service, a bit of a bad press because people are a bit dubious about them?
Yes, I think they do. People are under a total misapprehension. But if I have a client, the first thing that any of us were taught to do was to put straight in their mind exactly what was happening. If you go into a state of hypnosis, you can hear everything around you. You can come out if you want to. It just actually puts you into a state of total relaxation, and you're using something that happens to you normally. There's two rather wonderful words. When you first wake up in the morning, and you're laying in your bed, and you know you feel so, so heavy, that's called a state of hypnagogic.
Oh.
Because you're absolutely, totally relaxed. And the other one, when you're just about to go to sleep and you're in the same sort
yes.
of state where you're so heavy and you're just about to go, that's hypnopompic, which
oh,
are two
right.
wonderful words. But They actually describe something that is a natural hypnotic state.
Can you make those last for longer, or is it just simply a transient state? Can you sort of induce
As a natural thing, it's a transient state, yes. Because you're either just waking up or just going yes. to sleep. The other one is, and most people have experienced it, is if you go on a journey that you've done lots and lots of times, your mind goes off a bit on the way, and you yes. get there, and you don't remember actually driving there, and that's yes. another natural hypnotic state.
But there's a subconscious mind somehow is engaged enough.
Yes, we call it the unconscious mind, not right. the subconscious mind.
Okay, what's the difference?
To be honest, I'm absolutely sure.
That's fair enough.
But I think it's because you're unaware of what you're doing, so hence unconscious mind.
And when you're doing your hypnosis, I can imagine if people are really relaxed, maybe they can remember things. I know one of the big issues with trying to sort out your stuff is that you literally forget what may have happened, say, in your early years. Can what you do help people remember that and then relate to where the problems lie?
It depends which kind of therapy you're using. And okay. usually someone would come to us with a problem, like wanting to give up smoking, like wanting food control, like having an irrational fear.
Like a flying. I have a friend who yes. will not fly.
You can deal with that. You can actually do pain relief. You can do... I haven't got the script for that, but you can actually do a gastric band.
Wow, instead of the operation?
Yes.
So you
and it really works.
Wow.
And I've read umpteen articles where it, in the newspapers... where people have actually done that, and it does work.
Well, we've got a lot of nodding going on here in the studio, I have to say. So forget diets. That's the way to go,
isn't
it?
Well, it is, actually, because it's totally non-invasive.
Brilliant. And could you just do it just before a meal and then sort of
no.
let it go again?
No, you have to have several sessions.
Right.
And the script is given to you in a state of hypnosis, and you would then... respond over a period of several sessions.
Wow, that's absolutely awesome.
So once they've done their sessions with UK, do they need to keep coming back, or is that something they've learnt for life now and they can just go ahead and do it as much as they want to?
It depends on a person's will. Smoking being a good example, if someone wants to give up smoking, I've treated people usually about four sessions, and sometimes if they really liked smoking, and I think everyone's known a lot of people who give up smoking for a while and then come back, you can suggest that if someone needs to, they can come back for some more sessions. Mm-hmm. It's not something that convinces you to do something forever, but it certainly is worth repeating if you do regress into your bad ways again. Yes.
And I imagine if you do come back, occasionally it's like an MOT on a car, really, isn't it?
Kind of, yes.
We spend lots on things like cars, yeah. but do we spend enough on ourselves?
Yeah.
Do you find also that people who don't believe in it don't actually manage to respond to it? Have you got to really believe that hypnosis is going to work for you?
No.
In order?
There isn't anybody that can't be hypnotised. People can try and fight against you, but in actual fact, you can do it because it's just making you totally, totally relaxed and in a position where you respond to being suggested to.
I was interested to say that you can actually get out of it yourself, because so often you hear people say, well, I'll click my fingers and you'll come out of it, as though they're controlling the person coming out of it.
It depends how deep you've taken somebody. In some certain treatments, you would actually take someone deeper down, and there's different scripts that you add on to the normal scripts that take you down deeper. When I was training, I found sometimes that I relaxed myself so much because you used to do therapy on each other, and I was relaxed so much. Sometimes it would take two or three times. You have a script to bring people back, and sometimes it would take two or three times to bring me back.
So, if people want to actually come and have a treatment with UK, how would they get in touch with you?
My telephone or email.
Would you like to give out the details?
Yes, my telephone number would be 07769 901 061, and my email is kc.durrant, D-U-R-R-A-N-T, at tiscali.co.uk.
Brilliant, that's lovely. But I know I want to move on, however interesting this is, because you do so many other things in your life which we want to cover. And I know you're very keen on arts and crafts as well, aren't you? And
yes.
Make porcelain dolls. How do you go about doing this?
Well, there's two ways. The way you do it when you're taught is you use bought moulds that are either of a modern doll that someone sculpted or of the traditional dolls, the antique dolls. There's moulds of just about every antique doll that was ever made. Or you can sculpt your own and make a mould.
So which one do you tend to go for?
The moulds. Mm-hmm. I've done quite a lot, and I used to do international competitions, and that was great fun. I've been to Norway, to, I can't think of the other countries for the minute, my mind's gone blank, but I've been to various different countries and met so many people. There's a huge core of doll artists come over from Japan who don't speak any English, but we get through to them with bits of nodding and shaking hands, and a bit more nodding and a bit more shaking hands, and it really is fantastic. There's a lot come from Australia. It's gone off a little bit lately because there was a tiny bit of a hoo-ha in the doll world, and some people fell out with each other, which was a shame. And so it's not quite as popular as it used to be, but there is a large group. There are a doll society that are based in America that still do frequent exhibitions and competitions here.
And are they collectible items for people?
Yes.
Yeah, and they're worth quite a bit of money, are they?
Yes. When I first got into it, I went to a craft fair, and there was a girl there that had all these dolls out, and one of them fascinated me so much because it was the image of a child that lived opposite in a house across the road to me. And I looked at it because it was so lovely, and she said, would I like to buy it? And I said, how much is it? And when she told me it was £450, ooh, I said, oh, no thank you. So she said, would I like to learn to make them? And I thought, cool, yes I would. And never looked back.
So how long does it take you to make one doll then?
If you didn't stop, it would take about 2 days. But, of course, you have to pour the slip, then it has to dry, then it has to be fired for 12 hours, and then the kiln has to cool down for another 12 hours. And then when you start to paint, you fire, just for instance, a head. You'd paint the eyebrows and you'd fire it. You'd paint the eyelashes, you'd fire it. Any other detail you put on it, you'd paint it, you'd fire it. So it just takes a very long time in all.
And do you have all those bits of equipment in your own house?
Yes.
Wow.
I've got two kilns and umpteen moulds and stuff and glass eyes, and it's quite a hospital.
Yeah. And do you actually do classes for other people now as to how they can make them as well?
I have done in the past. I haven't done it for quite some time, but I have done it in the past, yes.
And is there a demand for them?
There was when it was at its height. As I say, there's been some sort of furor in the doll world, which is a shame, and not so many clients as there used to be.
Hmm. And when you have dolls from other parts of the world, do they all have like different costumes on, depending on where they come from?
The antique dolls, you're expected to dress in the form that they were dressed in, and the modern dolls, you can put in what you like. The foreign dolls were basically, the Japanese were different, and they were in kimonos, and fascinating. They didn't paint theirs like ours. They painted them with layers and layers and layers of lacquer.
Yeah.
And the kimonos, they could have 8 or 10 kimonos on, all layered up.
Mm, that's amazing, isn't it?
Mm.
So another thing that you do, you've just become a volunteer, haven't you, for the Surrey Police.
Yes.
Tell us about what that involves for you.
Well, I've got two strings to my bow on that one. One's an independent custody visitor, which is a team of people set up by the chief constable, and we go in teams of two into the police stations and visit all the detainees in the cells. What we do is we ask them a series of questions, And then look at their custody record. They're asked questions like, have they had the solicitor, their phone call? Are they being fed? And have they had their religious needs attended to? All sorts of things like that. And then on the custody record, everything that happens to them while they're there is written down.
So it's auditing the process that it's
indeed
been properly applied.
Yes.
For their benefit and for the benefit of...
For the benefit of the police, yes. And then the other role I've taken on is an appropriate adult. Anybody that has been from 16 down has needed an appropriate adult when they're interviewed. Often a parent, but sometimes they're too ashamed or haven't got one and don't want a parent. It's now been raised to 17 and below. And also vulnerable people, someone perhaps old or someone with mental problems or someone sick or whatever, or foreign people that need someone to actually assist them.
So what sort of assistance are you expected to give them then?
Well, you talk to them first and see that they're aware that they're supposed to have been given a caution and that they're entitled to their phone call and they're entitled to a legal representation.
So where do you get your training from to know what they're entitled to?
Well, I'm still in the process of training for that one, but it's a similar rights to the other role, the ICV, which is why I took it on, because they sort of marry together really quite well. And the training takes place at Mount Brown in
Guildford,
yes. Or I went to a teaching place at Guildford Cathedral. They've got a school there. Some of it's actually helped by the church there, because when I said I wanted to do it, I was invited to a party last Christmas at the Bishop of Surrey's house in Guildford. He calls it Tent Week, where all the local groups are invited to do something in his tent that week. And ours was a Christmas party.
Do you need special sort of aptitudes to get involved in this, or does the training pretty much give everything that's needed?
I don't think you need aptitude. I think you'd go on the training and make a decision whether it was for you or not.
Yes.
That's the only thing, whether it is a thing for you.
Yes, because I would love to help people, but what I might imagine, say, in your hypnotherapy role is that, you know, if you hear things that are unsettling, they might stay with me, and I don't think I would know how to shed things. And you must see some pretty, pretty hard things sometimes. I wonder how you deal with that.
The only thing I've seen that I thought was really sad, once I went in to visit the detainees, and there was a gentleman in the exercise yard, and he was a bit scruffy and a bit worse for wear. He'd been taken in as a drunk and disorderly,
right,
and been very, very abusive to the police. And he was so repentant. He's such a nice man, and he said that he was so, so sorry, because he just was like that when he was in drink, and he obviously needed a lot of help to stop drinking. But he
recognised that drinking was the problem.
He recognised that drinking was his problem,
that's
yes.
That's the first stage.
Yes.
With that sort of issue.
Mm.
Oh, that sounds very hard.
Oh.
Do you find, though, that sometimes you feel so sorry for them, but you can actually understand why they are like they are? Because I used to work for a charity that helped families, and sometimes when you saw the upbringing that some of these children had, you think, yes, in years to come, they're going to be ones that are in trouble just because of their role models, almost. Does that ever occur to you, or are you not really thinking at that sort of depth?
I don't think at that sort of depth, and I also don't actually really believe that either. I think that you are what you want to be and not what someone has... There's the nature and nurture thing, isn't there? And I think you can actually become a better person than your parents if you want to, if that's the situation you're in.
Mm. So how much of this does... How much time does this actually involve for you?
Well, the ICV, there's quite a big team, so we go out probably once a month in... a time frame from I think it's 6 o'clock in the morning until 12 o'clock at night, and then once every so many months we do an out of hours visit because it's a 24-hour job, and we'll go somewhere from 11 o'clock at night till 7 o'clock the next morning. I've done that once so far, and I think we went in at midnight.
Oh.
It's quite an easy one, that, because unless there's been some sort of ghastly raid going on, they're mostly asleep.
I was going to say, well, 3 o'clock in the morning is supposed to be the worst time, isn't
yes.
it? So midnight isn't quite so
no.
bad.
No, and I know the other thing you also have just taken on is the editor of the Addlestonian magazine. What does this actually involve for you?
Well, the Addlestonian is the magazine for the Addlestone Community Centre, and there are... If people don't know of the community centre, it's an amazing place. There's so much stuff goes on, and there's all sorts of affiliated groups and groups that are actually part of the community centre, and they send me a report every month, and I write it up into the... put it all together to make a magazine. And it's issued to every member of the community association.
So does that take a lot of your time, putting that together?
It takes... quite a bit of time, but it's usually last minute because people are inclined not to get their reports in until about 2 minutes before it should be printed.
But you get some sort of reward out of it for yourself?
Oh yes, I enjoy doing it, yes I do, and I met quite a few people and encountered quite a few different views, and it's quite good, yes.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming in and telling us all about what you do. Would you actually recommend giving up work early in order to follow the things you enjoy and to do volunteering?
If I have to tell you the truth, when I left work, I didn't want to. That was the last thing on my mind. My social life was there and I loved the work. But now I do all these things, I don't know how I ever find time to go to work.
That's just what I was going to say, actually. Yeah, yes, that's true. Well, good luck with everything. And are you going to take on anything else?
It depends. If something passes my way, I fancy, yes.
Good.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Hi, and here next to me now I have Jan Fuller, who's an Oakshott resident and has been there for more than 25 years. And Jan is also a councillor with Elmbridge Council for Oakshott and Stoke Dabanon, and the cabinet member responsible for leisure and culture. And, well, there's a broad remit. Jan, would you like to tell me about that?
It is a very broad remit, you're quite right. Anything really that relates to people's leisure time comes in my responsibility. So you could say I cover our commons, our parks, our recreation grounds, our leisure centre, our swimming pools, our community halls, dare I say our cemeteries.
And the poppy event?
Well, the museum yes. is part of my responsibility, and the Saturday events for children there are just wonderful. And it's great because so often it's Dad that can take them along on the Saturday and do things with them, whereas in the week dads don't often get the chance.
No.
So it's very noticeable that Saturdays at the museum can often be Dad and children
lovely
day,
or even a family day
or
well.
Even a family day yes.
yes. And you affect sort of so many aspects of people's lives through what you do, having this broad remit. Do you sort of get a sense of what it is that you do? Do you get involved yourself personally?
I like to go out and meet people, which means that I often go and visit the sports clubs that I interact with a lot. I like to find what they're doing. I like to be able to help them when they can. You know, a lot of the sports clubs do a fantastic job, and we try and help them by perhaps pointing them in the direction of funding that's out there. So if they ask me to go along, I like to go along because I like to meet people.
Yeah, so you were chatting earlier and you're saying about 3-year-olds playing tennis. I thought that sounded lovely.
It was a scheme that we did this summer. In fact, just behind us here in Churchfield on the recreation ground. And we worked with Weybridge Tennis Club, and they started tennis lessons for children who were as young as 3. And I came down and I couldn't believe it, seeing these tinies clutching a tennis racket.
As big as they are
at times, yes. And by the end of the sessions, they were quite capable of the coach throwing the ball and they would bat it back across the net.
So Serena Williams.
Fantastic.
Yes.
It's funny you should say that, actually, Jen, because we've had several people on Just Women programme who run other sports things for very small children, like rugby tots and things.
Yes.
And you just can't imagine a three-year-old, you know, throwing itself down on the floor and whatever, and football for young children as well. And yet in our day, you know, you'd never have thought of doing sport at least until you went to school, would you?
I know. And it's wonderful, particularly when you get some of the tinies who really have so much pent-up energy. I mean, I actually have a grandson who is 22 months, and my daughter is longing for him to be old enough to go to tumble rugby because he's really ready for it. Mm. And it's great. And it channels their energy into the right direction from an early age.
Because they do say now that children really, they tend to sit indoors, don't they, and play on computers and watch the television. Partly, I suppose, not through any fault of their own, but it's not so safe to go out and play. When we were young, we go and play in the street, you know, on the road. There's too many cars there now, and it's not safe, is it?
You're quite right. We used to go out, we used to go to the parks on our own, and nobody thought anything of it. Sadly, these days, that's not the case. But, you know, I was staggered, I think it was about a fortnight ago, to see something on the television saying that children now in this country are suffering from rickets because they are not getting out in the sunshine, because they don't go out to play. And our play leaders at Elmbridge have been doing a lot of work on this, and we are doing organised play sessions in our parks and recreation grounds where mum can feel comfortable that she can come along and leave the children under a supervised group.
It's brilliant.
Because you've got to get back that childhood of playing and building a camp and just natural play
without a computer. Yes. Yeah. I mean, my kids are brought up in Scotland, west of Scotland, which was pretty rainy, so it wasn't very outdoors, but there were these, you know, these places where you have these tubes you slide through and you climb over stuff and you end up in these ball ponds and whatever, which they absolutely loved, and you had to work out how to manage your way through it with lots of other kids. But that was indoors. Mm. I mean, this is absolutely brilliant, and then gets to get some fresh air at the same time.
We had a play day this summer in August at Molesey Hurst, and 3,000 children turned up.
How do you manage 3,000 children?
Well, we were lucky that we had volunteers from other organisations who came along, but it goes to show the need and the desire.
Well, mums need
things.
A break as
they
well,
do.
And then they can be more positive and proactive with their kids
and spend
quality time with
them.
That's
right.
So do you find that in the winter all this sort of finishes because of the weather? Because we were just talking about it being outside. Or are there things that children can do outside in the winter?
There are. And, I mean, if you look at all of our parks and recreation grounds, we've got a lot of play equipment in most of them, a lot of which over the last few years we've tried to modernise to respect the way that the attitude of children has changed. So there's a lot of wooden play equipment, there's a lot of almost adventure play equipment, and frankly, what's wrong with putting on a warm coat and going out there and playing on it?
Absolutely nothing. No. And I suppose for older people who are retired, there's all the healthy walks and things that are every day, aren't there? I was absolutely amazed to look and to see that there's 65 events sort of listed in November on the website, which is absolutely amazing, isn't it?
I know. I mean, we started the healthy walks 10 years ago. And at that time, if we did two walks a week, you know, it was considered to be really good. Now, there's hardly a day where there's not a healthy walk or a healthy cycle ride going on. And that, of course, as you will have noticed, includes Christmas Day, Boxing Day.
Yeah.
So you can walk off the turkey and the Christmas pudding
clear
the head.
I think in terms of getting people to interact with other people, often Christmas can be a very lonely time, and I notice you've got events 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th and 27th, so if you are on your own at Christmas, you can even go out and join an event and then sort of feel that you're interacting with people.
Yes, you know, healthy walks achieve a great deal because it is not just the actual body that we deal with. You're quite right. And if you go off and have a walk on your own, it's very nice, but it is desperately lonely. And you think, do I want to go down that path on my own because I don't know what's there?
And, there's a feel-good factor as well, being with other people.
There is. Yes. And you chat and you get to know them. And so, yes, at Christmas, when so many people can be on their own, go out and join one of our walks. Mm. You know, they're all on our website, or if you go into the library, there's a leaflet in there that lists them all. And there's no charge for them. No charge at all. And the people who lead them, they're brilliant. They really are. You know, they've sorted the walk out. They know exactly what's going on. There's all different standards of walks. So according to what you do, you should be able to find one.
Mm. And I think it's very impressive that you can go on the council website. And it's so good technically, isn't it, that you can actually click on the calendar and move it into your own calendar.
Yes.
So you don't miss anything, which is absolutely amazing.
And did you find also that if you click on a walk that you're interested in and then go down to the bottom of that page and say where you're coming from, put in your postcode, it tells you how to get there.
Yeah, definitely. So there's no excuse not to go, is
there? No, because a lot of our walks now are not in Elmbridge, which is, I think, great. The people who organise our walks, our volunteers, they go and look for interesting walks. Well, we don't have to stay in Elmbridge, you know, so they go off wherever they want. So if you need help on finding where you're meeting, that you can do through our web pages.
Yeah. So do you think that we'll actually run out of places to go to eventually, if you say you're doing them nearly every day?
No. I mean, some are favourite walks that are done regularly every week, particularly perhaps some of the walks for our elder residents. We have one every week that leaves Molesey Day Centre and comes back there in time for coffee and lunch if you want it. And I think walks like that have just become a favourite part of a person's week. Mm. And I can't see that ever changing. What will happen is we'll add walks. And if we find that some walks people don't like, yes, we'll remove them. But on the whole, we're just going to keep adding.
What sort of turnout do you tend to get for walks these days?
It varies with the weather, of course. But taking the Molesey one from the day centre, we can get about 30 people on that. An average will be about 20. We've known to, in bad weather, do a walk with just two or three people. If they want to walk, our volunteers will walk. Mm. So, you know, there's nothing to stop you.
And there has been quite a lot of research over the last few years as to actually what it does for your health, walking, hasn't there? Has that influenced people to join, do you think?
I think it has. But I think also, as you say, it goes back to the sociability of it. There's a lot of lonely people out there. And this is a way where you can meet people, improve your health and not spend any money. All of which must be pretty good. Yeah. We've got one gentleman who's just had a hip operation, so he only does half the walk and then he pops back to the day centre and waits until everybody else gets back so he can do his socialising.
So it's for all levels of people in terms of how active they are and different difficulty levels.
If you look on the calendar, you'll see that every walk that we offer does have notes on what it's suitable for. So you've got the slow walks, you've got the very slow walks, you've got those with the slope. We try and give enough information to enable people to work out exactly what they want.
Now, we've been talking about the walks, but obviously these are completely dependent on people being volunteers to help you. So how do people actually apply to do that? And what sort of training do they need? What sort of backgrounds do they need?
Background-wise, they need enthusiasm. They want to be somebody who wants to get involved. And there are so many people out there like that. If they want to get involved and help with our walks, then they can contact our leisure department at Elmbridge, either by ringing or by emailing, and somebody will be very happy to talk to them. If they decide that they want to be one of our volunteer walkers, then they are sent on a training day, which will give them all of the guidance they need, whether it be on doing the health and safety assessments that I'm afraid, as you know, we all have to do these days on anything we do. It also gives them some basic first aid training as well. So we want our volunteers to go out there feeling confident in themselves, that they are given as much information and as much training as possible to make it a pleasant experience for them as well.
And so do they actually come up with the ideas of where the walks are going to take place?
Oh, yes.
So most you need to know the area quite well then, don't you?
Well, most of them will go out and they will find the walks they want to do. Perhaps it's somewhere they've visited themselves and they think it would be a nice area for a walk. Perhaps it's somewhere they've heard about. So most of our volunteers will come up with the ideas themselves and they will go and do the assessments of the walk themselves.
Because I notice you actually have online how many miles it is. Does that mean they go with a pedometer or something to actually measure it? Because it's quite difficult measuring going through woods and things, isn't it?
Yes, we don't tend to be so much on mileage as on how long it will take. Because most of us know that we can walk along at a reasonable pace for half an hour or an hour. But if you were asked how far you'd gone in that time, would you actually know? Because I know I wouldn't have a clue.
Especially if you're talking to someone, you tend to walk a bit slower,
don't you? I couldn't possibly comment about that. But you're quite right. So we tend to ask our volunteers how long it will take at a set pace, because that enables people to really make a decision. Can I walk for half an hour? Can I walk for an hour? Because if we said to them it's a mile, it might actually put them off.
What happens if someone's taken ill during a walk? I presume there's procedures in place for that.
Yes, I mean, the point is all of our volunteer organisers will have had basic first aid training. We, of course, will have mobile phones with us, so we will cater for whatever.
Yeah, so there's absolutely no excuse.
No excuse at all.
No excuse not to get involved.
And the other thing is also, is it a male-female divide equally? We were talking earlier about maybe women wanting to get out and do things. If it was a man who wanted to go, do you think he might be a bit put off thinking, oh, it's going to be all women?
It's certainly not all women. No. It's certainly not all women. There's a really good mix of people. We had a celebration a few weeks ago of our 10th anniversary of the Healthy Walks, and it was very interesting. About 70 people came along to that, and there was a total mix of male and females on it. So I think it's quite fair to say that there is not an all women or an all men emphasis on it. It is a good mix.
And what about the age mix as well?
Age mix also varies a lot, and I think probably that tends to vary a bit more according to the type of walk that's chosen. If it's a very slow, sedate walk, maybe that's more suitable for our older residents or those who are just recovering from surgery of some sort. Those who want a brisk walk will be setting off on the longer distance ones.
So what's the longest distance walk that actually they would organise?
I can't honestly tell you in the setup of distance, but we do our walks sometimes a bit longer than that. Some of our walks, which are very popular, we do a figure of eight, and it ends up back in the car park after half of the walk. And those who've decided, I can't do any more, can stop then, and the others can keep going.
So if you do it near a pub, they can just get themselves a beer while the rest of them go off.
That's my sort of walking.
And mine.
I like a destination.
Yes.
But there's been actually quite a lot of research, actual official research, actually, isn't it, into how things are helping people's health.
Yes.
Do they actually publish all these things as to what different things it can help with? Because I know it's meant to be blood pressure, isn't it? Weight.
That's right. It's really the cardiovascular and the weight. These walks are sponsored, not in any way with a financial sponsorship, by the Ramblers Association and Cancer Research. Because they recognise the need for us all to exercise. And we submit to them the figures of the number of walkers we have, and they do all of the statistics on it across the country.
So it's not just done in Elmbridge, lots of other counties do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm aware that round here, Richmond Council do it, Mole Valley do it, Epsom and Yule do it. So there is, you know, a lot of... In fact, I do know that I live near Oxshott Heath, and I do know that Epsom and Yule come and walk on Oxshott Heath. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, it's this moving outside your own comfort zone, if you like.
And if you wanted to join the ones from, say, another council area, there's no limit like that. It's not just for Ambridge people.
No.
I'm thinking about sort of tougher forms of walking as well. Like, you know, what's the sort of walking you do in the Olympics? You know, the fast walking. Sort of, I know you've had
the power walking.
Yes. That's it. Because, I mean, that is very good for getting you fit. And I know you've also had responsibility for doing the Olympics. I'm wondering if you've got something which breaches the gap in the middle.
It's not a danger. Power walkers need to have the knowledge of how to do it properly.
It's a sport, yes.
And the danger, if we offered power walking to people who didn't know how to do it, is that actually it's one of those things that can cause more harm than good.
So go to a specialist place,
yes,
if you want to step it,
yes,
up a little bit.
And I am aware of friends of mine who do that, but you do need to go to people who really know how to do it, because otherwise you can muck up your back and hips and everything else. So we tend to avoid things like that.
Mm. We were talking earlier about the fact that children perhaps don't get as much exercise as they ought to. Mm. Do Elmbridge do events for children that involve walking, like healthy walks for children?
We don't. I think children tend to view walks as a bit, which is why the things that we do with the children tend to be much more sort of, if you like, adventurous, which is why we have our play days and things like this, because we can get them active, we can get them to be aware of how to use the outdoors that surround them. And if you look at the things that we in Elmbridge provide for our young people, you know, we've got the parks and recreation grounds, all of which have got the play equipment. We've got some skateboard parks, which are tremendously popular for the youngsters. And, of course, we have for the tinies our paddling pools, which is another form of exercise for our real tinies. And we've been looking at these over the last few months to see how we can modernise them, and we're hoping next year to come forward with some new ideas for them. So healthy walks as such is not something that we do for the children, but we do try and do as many things as we can to encourage them to partake in all the sporting activities that are in the area.
And what about if people want to find out more about the healthy walks and also about becoming a volunteer for one of these healthy walks? How would they go about that?
Really, the best thing is to go onto our website, or if you haven't got access to the website, then ring the Leisure Department at Elmbridge Borough Council and they will be very happy to talk to you about it.
Good. And how many volunteers are you really looking for? Is it open-ended?
It's open-ended. Because, frankly, if we get more volunteers, then we will consider more walks. And also, you know, we have some volunteers who do an awful lot for us, and maybe we would then find that some of them would be quite glad of a break occasionally.
I know the cycle rides as well are popular, because the mayor, was it last year that she was actually leading, wasn't she?
Janet and her husband Roy lead a lot of our cycle rides for us, and you will have seen from our programme they're doing some just after Christmas, and they're very, very popular, and it's a good safe way for people to get out on their bikes.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, we are coming towards the end of our programme now, so I'd like to thank both our guests today on Just Women. That's Kay Durrant, psychotherapist, hypnotherapist and editor of Edlestonian magazine, to name just a few, and of course to Jan Fuller, councillor for Oxshott and Stoke Dabernon. And thanks also go to co-presenter today, Claire Gibson.
Well, thank you, Alison. And just to say, we're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives. So if you know of someone you think should be on our programme, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we'll get in touch with them.
And hopefully we'll get them on a future programme. And details of past and future guests are on our website, brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen. And you can find us on Facebook too, on justwomen.br. So thank you for listening, and join us again next week for Just Women, 1 o'clock on Tuesdays. And it's goodbye now from me, Alison Florence.
And it's goodbye from me, Claire Gibson.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.